Okay, so looking to say that insight is the way out. Insight is the way of at least coming to understand and experience that things don't exist as they appear, even if they continue to look that way, is to investigate them, is to think about them, and to do analytical meditation in that way. Not saying all meditation has to be analytical, but you can do more than one thing with meditation, and non-conceptual meditation is extremely important, and indeed, the analytical meditation is to support arriving at an experiential understanding in non-conceptual meditation. It's a way of supporting and arriving that, not a different way of going in many ways. But if we, say, wanted to challenge things being appearing as if they exist from their own side, appearing to be completely standalone, unaffected by anything, uninfluenced by anything, completely self-sufficient, having all their qualities, not as a result of depending on other causes and conditions, but just kind of popping up the way they are, then I think one of the first ways in, and it's certainly the way in that His Holiness is recommending in his structure, is you start by appreciating interrelatedness, interdependence, and impermanence. Because when we actually think about impermanence, we kind of get it. But then when we're not thinking about it, we go back and act and react as if things were permanent in a way that they're not. Or we lose sight of the depth of it and lose sight of, going back to what we were talking about much earlier, that ourselves and phenomena just arise, come together, and appear the way they do because they're the result of causes and conditions. And when those causes and conditions no longer exist, the objects either don't exist or don't exist in the same way. And there's a relationship between the interrelatedness and the impermanence, the fact that things arise on causes and conditions and go out of existence when the causes and conditions no longer apply, is in no small part connected with change and impermanence. So by starting by appreciating that interrelatedness, the interdependence and the impermanence is a good place to start. So that's, I think we're all right for time. Yeah, let's do a meditation that might give you an idea of yeah, sort of conceptual and analytical meditation, just focusing the thought a little bit. So if you find a comfortable posture. First of all, as we do in the mornings, just relax. Relax the body and the mind for a moment as if you were preparing for sleep. Be present to it, but you can kind of, within the posture, allow the body to do just that. Just maintaining enough effort, but as near effortless as possible, to be present. remaining alert, but not trying to interfere with anything. Everything else can just go on just the way it is, not suppressing anything, not chasing after anything, not indulging anything. Whatever goes on, whatever arises, you know, physical sensations, emotions, thoughts, thoughts in the fullest sense, you know, propositional thoughts, strings of dialogue, involuntary processing, where we've come from, where we are, where we're going to, hopes, fears, expectations, big background emotions, like, don't like, neutral, images, daydreams, reveries, whatever it is. It's all taking place within the rather vast sphere of awareness. That awareness is kind of hasn't really got any location or attributes. It's clear and it's cognizant, we know. Even if I say we know and something pops up and says, what do you mean we know? There's something that is wordlessly aware of that. Oh, that's interesting. Something doesn't agree. Unless we're impaired in some way, there's a clarity of the experiences we're having throughout the five senses. So just resting there again, either by drawing the awareness into the empty space at the heart, or just resting wherever you are. Just for a few moments, rest there, allowing mind and body together to just settle into the natural state. Then we might turn the focus of our thoughts within that vast, relaxed space of awareness to where we are. We're on retreat at the Land of Joy. In a building or a complex of buildings, this part was built as a house. Before Land of Joy, it was called Greenhoff Hall. If we drove past or came down the driveway and had a look, it, without thinking much about it, might appear as if it's just there. Like it's always been there, existing from its own side, independent, standing on its own, part of the landscape. But of course, as soon as we go there, we think, well, actually no, because it must have been built at some time. When was it built? Maybe different parts were built at different times, different materials. What was here before the house? Or any of the buildings? Was there anything at all? Well, presumably. It's on the side of a low hill. Maybe vegetation. Were there roads before the building? Possibly. The roads may go back to Roman or pre-Roman times. Don't know, but human beings may have been farming here for a long time. The landscape will have changed over time. Might look out the window. There it is, perfect, just as it is. Everything in its place, existing from its own side. But was it always there? If we go back far enough, maybe there were mountains rather than a low hill. Maybe no vegetation. Then back to the formation of the earth. Back to the sun. Before the sun. Before the birth of the galaxy. In an absolutely vast and apparently infinite universe that we know hardly anything about. On a scale that we can barely conceive of. But then at some point, conditions were right. People came along and saw it as a reasonable place to build a house and wanted to build it. Resources had to come together. Other people had to come together. Plans had to be made. Building went on. House served its purpose for a while. Maybe those people sold it, maybe they died. How many families born, raised, before it ceased to become a house? A kind of a community hall or whatever, or what was its journey to arriving here as a retreat centre? How was Land of Joy acquired? How's it sustaining itself? What's going to happen in the future? For how long will it be a retreat center? Will there come a time when there's no building here at all? Well, of course there will at some point. Will there come a time when there's no landscape as we understand it? Well, of course, eventually the sun will go out. Organic life, the thin film of organic life that surrounds the planet, won't be able to survive as it is. And we might think, oh, well, yeah, but kind of happens slowly, evolves over time, which of course at one level it does. But does that really make it any more permanent? Does it really justify that appearance that it has of just popping up right in front of us? Always been there. Was there before I was born. Probably be there after I'm dead. It's always been there. Existing from its own side. Look, it's really charming. It probably hasn't changed. Ah, here we go. Seduced by the way it appears. We start to fantasize about the way it exists. Then maybe if we look the other way, the materials it's made out of, the wood, the brick, the rock, the breeze block, the paint, the wire, the framework, and all the other things that might go into a building of this sort over time. Kind of inanimate materials, though. But what are they made up of? Odd too that when we take all those individual things and put them together in a certain way, we designate it a house, but otherwise we might not. So there's no inherently existing, independent, self-sufficient from its own side house. There's something we label a house because it fits certain conventional, practical and conceptual requirements that makes it appropriate to call it a house. If it was just a collection of stables, we'd challenge it. But no, it's not really a house, it's a collection of stables. So it's just labelled a house on the basis of its parts, you know, either appropriately or inappropriately. There's not much more to it than that. Does that mean there isn't anything here? No, there is. Just that it doesn't exist in the way this appears at first blush. The materials themselves, whatever they are, of course, are they kind of, is that where it ends? Or are they dependent on anything? They all relate together. Their interrelatedness kind of makes for a house. But all of those materials didn't just, they weren't found lying about like that. Some human beings had to mine them, machine them, cut them, fashion them, bring them together, assemble them according to an idea. Those materials themselves, oh yeah, they do have parts, don't they? Like the wood came from a tree. It's got grain, it's got knots, it seasons over time, changes its shape imperceptibly. No doubt, every now and again, people have to pay attention to doors because the wood, however slowly, still seasons gets soaked in the rain and then dries in the summer. It's sensitive to temperature. And the gaps around the frames get tighter or wider. When the temperature changes, you can hear the materials stretching and clicking, responding to the onslaught of the elements, changes in temperature. Then internally too, they're dependent on other parts. There's a structure within a structure, the materials. Have a molecular structure or an atomic structure. At that level, there might be a lot of movement, a lot of energy, a lot of vibrancy that appears to us as something completely inanimate and still, responding and behaving in different ways to environmental stimuli like heat and cold. But our ideas about that, whilst no doubt verifiably true by measurement and experiment, stuff we call matter, it's really a conceptual construct out of information. We see it and think about it that way because of information we've acquired. There's a sense in which information may be prior to matter or ontologically, certainly as we experience it. I've been using the computer all day. We use our mobile phones. They depend in the same way for all the kind of materials. But what they make possible is actually also heavily dependent on quite well worked out lengthy arrangements of zeros and ones. Ouch. Anyway, the atoms and the deep structure, whatever it is, that appears to us as material substance, is at that level constantly changing, moment by moment. There's no way you could insulate it. You know, if you wanted to make their house, Land of Joy, last much longer, you could say, well, let's insulate it from the elements. Let's do everything we can to prevent any change. Well, even if you imagine in some thought experiment that there was a magic polystyrene that you could encase it in that would literally prevent any change, any external impact on it whatsoever, it would still rot away from the inside. It's like life. It's a vibrant, apparently beginningless and endless force that just keeps going. It's dynamic. It doesn't stop. In the same way, we can do all we can to remain healthy, look after ourselves, and probably good to do so. But there's no way of stopping the fact that we're going to die when the causes and conditions for our existence cease. We're not permanent. We're dynamic, living, vibrant beings. as with the building, as with everything it depends upon, as with all its parts, as with all the people that built it, as with all the people that can call it a house. Nothing is going to last. And that largely is only a problem for us because somehow we think it will, because we accept that things exist in the way they appear. And very often we're so attached to that we find it disturbing or unsettling if people remind us that it's not the case. It's kind of unpleasant. But that impermanence, why is it the case? It's because everything is interrelated. Nothing is frozen. Nothing is concrete. Nothing is solid. Nothing we can alight upon somehow exists separate from the rest of the universe. Using the term universe as meaning the whole shooting match outside of which there's nothing else. If something changes, the whole thing changes. Maybe significant in some local part and totally insignificant elsewhere given the scale. Life doesn't stop. It's not static. It's not solid. It's not concrete. It doesn't even appear the same to beings of different dispositions and sensory organizations. Just on this planet alone, in the thin film of organic life that surrounds the earth, there are so many different forms of sensibility who don't see things in the same way. Hear things we can't hear. The focus on the environment ever reminds us of this. No? We want trees, so we hack them down in large scale for buildings and other things. Has this huge impact on the life cycles of other life forms that we barely knew anything about. Till we suddenly realize their place, their dependence and interdependence, and our dependence on them, and then it becomes a worry. Oh. So we begin to open up and sort of reflect in this way. It's a kind of guided meditation, but we're here on retreat. We can continue to reflect for ourselves in areas that might interest us. There's also something at the back of the mind that might say, well, can you actually come up with anything that is permanent? Is there anything that actually does exist in the way that it appears? If you look like that and you can't come up with anything, and it's always repeatedly at the back of your mind, and you kind of look, consider things in this way, sometimes just as we're doing, in a quite considered and reflective way in an analytical meditation, then that itself is not existing in a vacuum. It'll impact your experience. and your experience will modify as a result. When you look at something, the string of reasoning might not actually come to mind, but you'll kind of know, oh, it looks like that, but of course, no, it's not really like that. At a conventional level, it can be quite practical, you know, the sense of the guttering on the house, you know. What's it been like over the summer? Where are the trees? Because if we think it's all carries on just the way it is and exists as it appears, then we're going to be surprised if when it really rains heavy, the guttering starts to flush with water and you realise there's a blockage because the trees in the autumn filled it up with stuff. But we thought, oh, it's just okay, just the way it appears, and never thought to get a ladder up, have a look and clean them out. It's just a tiny example. Then we come somewhat surprised if we get soaked when it bursts. Oh. Oh yeah, the seasons, they change. They have an impact on us, the buildings, the landscape. Moment by moment, at another level. Changing constantly, almost in fractions of a moment. And then moments, of course. It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because moments are kind of nice to talk about, we understand them, but is there an inherently existing moment? Moments, that's got a start and a finish, and a middle. Really? But where does the past become the present and the present the future? If there were inherently existing moments of time, we'd be able to offer a definitive answer to the question. But there aren't any, there's just a continuum that we measure. And it's the measurement that gives us the moments that are a conceptual designation. Time is the metric of change. Well, we can fantasize it as an inherent existence and read good books by H.G. Wells about time machines and things like that. But anyway, a good moment to close, let go, drop back. The awareness out of which all this consideration, images, thoughts, connections arose. Let go completely and just rest there with whatever experience we have. Letting go to anything we may have been holding on to. Aha moments, thoughts, emotions. Just rest without doing anything. Allow mind and body to settle into the natural state. Anyway, so yeah, interrelatedness, interconnection, and impermanence. By looking for insight into that, we can begin to challenge the idea that things just exist in the way they appear from their own side. And I'm sure there's lots of other things and other ways you can think of doing that for yourself. And even if it's not in meditation, sometimes it's interesting to study things. So reading in a way and study, if you do it in a relaxed and single-pointed way, or a form of meditation in action, and you might find things in that way that also challenge our usual. We kind of wander about in kind of a sleep, don't we? It's kind of a dream world. I think there was something here. I think it was rather good. I'll bring it up. Here it is. Much of our planning is like waiting to swim in a dry ravine. Many of our actions are like housekeeping in a dream. Delirious with fever, one doesn't recognise the fever. Anyway, it's just before 5 to 6. You can early off to lunch by 5 or 6 minutes, or dinner for 5 or 6 minutes, or if there are any questions, happy to take them. Questions, comments, thoughts. If not, it's dinner time.